Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you, whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita. Jean Marie is not with us today.
And I am Ron.
And collectively, we're the hosts of Podcast DX. Our guest today is Marcy Benet. Is that correct? I hope.
That's perfect.
All right. He's a health coach from Hungary with a focus on the human nervous system, which interests me very much. He suffered through COVID a couple of months back and created a protocol to bounce back from the after effects of the virus. Thanks to it, he recovered quickly and is trying to reach out to as many people as possible to educate them on the functions and workings of the nervous system. Also, the protocol was designed so that anyone can do it beside or instead of the medications, and the results can be measured in days and not months. It sounds exciting.
Yeah, it does.
I could hardly wait to get you on the show.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
No, it's a pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine.
Well, I want to jump right into it. We said that you're a health coach. Can you tell us more about what you do as a health coach?
Yeah, so I picked up my my knowledge throughout the years and from different variety of fields. I started out as a professional athlete myself and started working out people and working mainly on the physical side of people. And then eventually I stumbled into a pretty interesting dude called Julien Pineau, and he's his crew, his tribe, his baby called StrongFit, which showed me ways to approach the body in a more effective way and more evolutionary based way. And with their help, I started researching the human nervous system and what effects that had on different type of workout regimes.
Okay.
So we started stumbling into workouts where people just hit intensities where they just broke down in tears, and we didn't really know what was happening, but we anticipated that, okay, we need to dig deeper in the psychology of the whole thing because something is happening here that we don't really understand. Mm-hmm. And so that was the time when I started digging deeper into how the psychology works and the mental aspect of the whole human experience.
It's amazing.
And so I started combining those. And I created a system where among workouts, personal trainings, I could also focus on the personal development of people. So introducing a little bit of NLP, introducing a little bit of shadow work and the like into the workouts. But that ended when COVID hit because I couldn't really meet with people.
Right.
And this really needed a safe space and for me to meet with the clients. So I ended up coaching them online and going on with just online coaching and then going on as a health coach like that.
Well, that's good. You're very flexible that way. That's pretty good. That's very entrepreneurish. Marcy, your website discusses recalibrating your breathing. If we can just focus on that to start, you mentioned that elevated CO2 levels during infection. Here in the U.S., the National Institute of Health published an interesting study on May 18th of last year. They said that a significant factor to the morbidity and mortality of COVID-19 is from the abnormal number of carbon dioxide in the levels of the patients. So metabolic studies alone on some of these patients have shown abnormally high metabolic rates. And with high metabolic rates, a body ends up with increased carbon dioxide production and increased oxygen usage, both of which can result in high CO2 levels and low O2 levels. They hypothesize that decreasing the metabolic rate in these patients will help the O2 and CO2 levels balance. Their idea is to use hypothermia to reduce metabolic demand. They say that the aim is to apply mild hypothermia to COVID patients in order to improve their gas levels. I have a feeling that this is a good segue into introducing your protocol. Can you please tell us what you've discovered on this balance of CO2 and O2?
Yeah, so it's a really good segue to go deeper into that. And the first thing I always explain to people is to understand that there are basically two circles of picking up O2 into the body. And the first one is when we breathe in and through our lungs and our alveoli, we send the O2 into our bloodstream. That's the first thing. And because COVID infected a lot of people through their lungs, and because they couldn't pick up so much oxygen through their lungs, the excess oxygen through with the masks or respiratory machines was a really good idea to send more air towards the bloodstream, because the capacity of their lungs was just impaired. But it's important to know that there's a second circle which acts on CO2, and that the body needs a sufficient level of CO2 to switch the pH levels to go towards a more acidic state. Mm-hmm. And that then this, like, it picks out the O2 from the hemoglobin in the bloodstream, and so the O2 can end up in the cells and the muscles. So both high O2 levels and high CO2 levels are important as well. It's not only that we send a lot of O2 towards a person and then they can breathe fine and that O2 ends up in their bodies, but it's important to get that balance between O2 and CO2, right, as well. It's the same way as a person with a panic attack, mm-hmm, would hyperventilate. Mm-hmm. And so they would give them a paper bag to breathe into that. Mm-hmm. So the important part in there is that they don't suffocate basically on O2, but they can calm down because they're just rebreathing the air that they breathe out. So their CO2 levels actually rise.
Gotcha.
Okay.
So that's the important part to know, first of all. And then going off of this study, the high metabolic rates during COVID infection is a really good sign that the body is in a constant fight when it's battling this virus. So the elevated metabolic rates, even though the body is not really doing anything because they're laying at home or laying in the hospital, the body is in a massive fight, and it's the metabolic rate is elevated, so it can produce energy to fight off these pathogens or the virus that they found. With that, it's similar to what one would experience when they are putting themselves through for example, a work regime where they have chronic stress in their work. So people can end up with chronic stress where their head is just buzzing and they're constantly on that high. And mm-hmm, we know that that can result in burnout, mm-hmm, in crashing, in fainting, and just the system shutting off, saying that, okay, dude, that's enough. I'm done. I'm out of here. But this time around, like, people that are not really doing that proactively to themselves, but they are suffering through a virus.
Okay.
And so when they get out of the virus and they get back to a healthy function of the lungs, one needs to recalibrate this balance of O2 and CO2, because they can pick up the oxygen properly most of the times because their lungs recover. They get clear from the virus, they are okay. But they can't really trigger these sensors of CO2. Like 89% of our sensors with our bodily gases are focused on CO2, not really,
right,
O2.
Okay.
Right. So not really oxygen, but our body is really focused on, okay, where is our carbon dioxide
level? Right.
So these receptors, when the CO2 is really, really elevated, this is just my hypothesis. I just hypothesize about this. When the CO2 levels raise during COVID, the receptors themselves, because it's elevated, they start dying off a little bit. similar thing when somebody's hormone levels start going up, or if somebody's drinking a lot of coffee, those have receptors as well, and because those change the state of the body and the internal environment, the body is starting to adapt to that state as well.
Okay.
So if the body's receptors for CO2 are starting to die off, then afterwards we can pick up the oxygens, but we can't really utilize it. So that's why people are still experiencing shortness of breath, can't really go there to breathe, and then they mostly start giving themselves excess oxygen just to get some of that into the body. So they're actually forcing it through, but they can never get back to that homeostasis of, okay, I can experience the CO2 level as well. I can go acidic. I can pick out the oxygen from my bloodstream, and I can also pick up the oxygen from the outside world, from the air, as it's supposed to be. So with the first step of the protocol that I'm doing, it's basically targeting this. So in order to trigger these receptors that are detecting CO2, one needs to actually go higher on the CO2, not for all time being, but just momentarily. Really push the CO2 going high, so these receptors switch on, and so I can pick out more oxygen from the bloodstream, and then my body can go back and be more
like balanced,
homeostasis,
right?
Not even that. The opposite from acidic, was that?
Oh, acid base.
I'm not a science guy.
Okay, come on. Acid.
Alkaline.
Base. Alkaline. Thank you.
Yeah, that's it. So how's this? Yeah. So it can go acidic, and then it can switch over to be more alkaline. So it can pick up more oxygen, and then it can deliver it to my cells and to my muscles.
Is that something that could be tested with the blood test to see if your blood is too alkaline or too acidic?
Yes, but these are really very, very tiny changes. And one could test it, but this changes really from moment to moment. And also it's the same thing as with chronic stress, that people try, like at the end of a long day, if somebody has experienced that, you can try to meditate the continual buzzing away. As in the trial, they try to bring down the metabolic system with a cold shower, a cold bath, I think it was.
Right.
But the body is constantly fighting that. So it's trying to push the metabolic system up, you're trying to force it down, and it's not really going in the direction that the body would like to go. So pushing up the metabolic demand just momentarily, so the body can calm down afterwards. But it would actually, like, okay, force it down a little bit, but then eventually it would go back up. So in my opinion, also for chronic stress, they sometimes use just cold showers. Just because momentarily it kicks you off. So it's not just like cooling you down, but it's like elevating the metabolic system even more so that the body can calm down. And with the gases, it's the same thing, I think. If you can push the CO2 levels and you can hit those receptors, then you can start picking out oxygen from your bloodstream, and your body can recalibrate these gas levels and can be in homeostasis.
Okay.
So, Marcy, how do you measure success with your program? You mentioned the oxygen level. Do you use O2 sensors, or how do you know?
Yeah, the O2 sensors and the pulsometers are a good start.
Okay.
But they're a little bit unpredictable, just because those levels can change momentarily as well. And mm-hmm. I think we saw that with certain protocols that people had for COVID. For example, when they said that, okay, when your levels go below a certain number, if you switch over to your laying on your stomach,
yes,
and you start forcefully breathing, then you can bring your O2 levels up.
Okay.
So are you in trouble there or not? That's the question.
Okay.
Because you can change the levels again momentarily. Yes, there is something going on, but if one, for example, has better sleep, and I would go for that. That's my main area of focus, of them feeling better, and also quality of life, just from their subjective experience. If that increases, then I think we're on the good path.
Okay, so that's how you measure the success, is whether or not they're sleeping soundly. And if so, it's a subjective thing. You don't use a pulse meter or a oxygen sensor. You want to do more, because that's like right now, you want to do like a over time, right? You want to see like over time, how is it responding?
Yes, okay. Absolutely.
Okay.
Momentarily, we could put the pulsometer on the person, and it would depend if, okay, they had some metabolic demand put on them, or they just stood up or walked around or had a tough day, and that could switch around drastically.
Okay.
And they could think that, oh shit, I'm in trouble, and that would just put more stress on their nervous system,
right,
which would, again, put them through more stress and couldn't sleep that well, then they couldn't recover that well, and that could have drastic effects. But if they feel that, okay, I'm at the end of my day, I still feel okay, but I'm at the end of my my energies, my capabilities, I need to lay down now. If they start out from that and they strengthen that that personal responsibility, where they go off of their own experiences of themselves, their own emotions, their own signals of their bodies, that's the best way to go forward.
Okay. All right. And how many people have you already worked with your protocol, and what are the results that you're seeing?
I work with a couple people throughout, as in from start to where they already felt better and could sleep better and could go back to work to a certain percentage. They had really good results, like in the duration of a couple of weeks, they could already feel and do a lot more and feel a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And also I'm trying to help a lot of people through, there's a Facebook group called, Survival Core, and they pull together, post-COVID, patients, and, they share ideas, they give, support to each other. And it's a very good resource for people with post-COVID syndromes. And they talk about a lot of things. So it's not only medical, but also the support side, like how they can get benefits, how they should apply, what they can ask for from the employers, and so on. So it's a really good resource for post-COVID people.
Okay.
Great, thanks. Earlier we mentioned that you had COVID, so you know firsthand. But can you tell our listeners, working with someone recovering from COVID, how overwhelming can that be? How does that make you feel as a person actually working with them? Do you get isolated at times, or, you know,
overwhelmed?
Overwhelmed, yeah, probably a better word.
Yeah.
COVID is an interesting phenomenon, because, for example, on the anxiety side, very few people know that if one is living with elevated CO2 levels, the anxiety, the fear, and the panic attacks can come from these gas levels solely. So it's not only the mental side, the amygdala and the fear center, that's sending out these signals and then can produce these states of fear and panic, but it's actually elevated CO2 levels can have the same results without the brain interfering whatsoever. So coming from this side and me having experienced this state, I sometimes really, really feel for these people, because they mostly go through experiences that can really be changed only mentally, but should really be focused on the on this gas exchange side of their homeostasis. And if that's recalibrated, then they can get back to baseline, and then they can really focus on getting better. For me personally, this all comes down to responsibility. Like, who is responsible for their emotions and their getting better? And I could say that I make them better, but that wouldn't be true. And I think for all healthcare workers or caregivers, this would be a very important lesson to learn. For me, basically, this was a very important lesson to clear the responsibility, the responsibilities that I'm having, and to have them have their responsibilities as well.
Right.
So you're putting the responsibility on the patient.
Exactly.
Right.
And that their feelings, how they feel, what they do for themselves, that matters. It's not me who I'm prescribing something to you and then I expect you to be better.
Mm-hmm.
I can only do that, prescribe you something. I can make you do those things.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I can only, like, if you're having questions, I'm all about explaining stuff as much in detail as possible. So we understand stuff about your health and your body the best way that you can. And then you are having the responsibility to do for your health.
Okay.
And if I can stay in that zone and not step over that and not really and not take over too much responsibility for other person's emotions or health, then first of all, I can protect myself in a way that if some stuff doesn't work out as I planned, then I can say that, okay, it's their responsibility. Like, I can only go that far.
Right, right.
Of course, I'm trying my best to do here. Like, it's not pushing up responsibilities, but letting the other person to keep responsibility. I think that's a better approach.
Okay.
Okay, perfect.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Marcy, have you found that social media or online groups or meetings or other technology could help can help you from feeling isolated or alone in dealing with these battles that you're working with?
I myself am a very big introvert, so I was on the side of being very pleasant with the state that we're in now. But also, I think in one way, this was a great wake-up call for a lot of people to, again, look into what they might give over responsibility of to other people, whether it be work or internal states or being loved or having the sense of connection. If one is giving that away in terms of it's being dependent on something or some state or someone, then if that is taken away, for example, in this pandemic, then that's the end of it. Then I don't have it. I can create it for myself. Whereas with online media, one could have still created that if one was resilient, and mm-hmm. One could pick up on these signs of COVID, basically, that, okay, I'm feeling stuck here somehow, that I'm handing over my sense of worth, a sense of being socially loved to my friends. And if I can't meet with them, then I'm just no one. And I feel like I wouldn't want to say the S word, but
we understand.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's a wake up call for me to, okay, dig deeper, go within, and then find out what I am missing, where could I have lost, why I am outsourcing this if I can create this for myself. But online media, I think, has made a great leap during this time, and it will be a great help to connect, even like this, like throughout the world. More and more programs were created, and it's like during war times,
people rise to the occasion.
The industry is just elevating during war times and stressful times. And I think with connecting through the online world, it really showed throughout these times,
right,
as well.
Yeah.
They progress.
I think so.
Marcy, how has COVID affected your stress level and your overall mental health?
Well, it's been a great challenge for me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And a big test, basically. First of all, getting COVID and then surviving it and then recovering from it. That was basically a big test to see if the stuff that I was doing before COVID, whether that was of any use or not.
Mm-hmm.
So having an approach of doing workout regimes, doing intermittent fasting, or having a lifestyle in nutrition or mental health, to not really focus on the present, but also do it for future problems when they arise. It's I think something to for everyone to look into, that you're not really only doing this for you to feel well in the now, mm-hmm, but also in future times when you get hit with a virus, you get hit with a layoff or any form of loss, that you can survive it, go through it with a good state, and then you can pick up right after where you left off. So it was mostly a challenge and a test. And now it's just getting better and better, I think. That at least what I'm feeling.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah, you're actually, I think, first person we've interviewed that has had COVID. Is that right?
Well, I think maybe the first person that has told us.
Yeah. I know some people that have had COVID, but they had a very mild case. Was yours a mild case, or was yours pretty severe?
So the funny thing about this whole thing was that I was never actually tested positive for COVID.
Okay, but you know that by the symptoms that you probably had it.
I had the antibody test, mm-hmm, afterwards that, yeah, showed that I was full of them. So that's what pointed out that I had it, plus the symptoms that I had really pointed towards that I had COVID. Mm-hmm. But both the PCR test, plus I think they did four or five quick tests throughout my 2 weeks of being bedridden,
mm-hmm,
they were all negative.
Okay.
And so the first sign of it was me fainting and just passing out. And then they took me to the hospital, did a bunch of tests. They said that everything was fine. I should go home, lay down, and
wow,
just take care of myself.
Wow.
And then I think after that, a week after that, because the fever wasn't going down with just all the medications that I took, they prescribed me some antibiotics to look if maybe there was something some bacterial infection that was, mm-hmm, affecting the fever.
Mm-hmm.
So I started taking that. That wasn't really helping. So it took me another week of fever. Plus, in between, they found out I had pneumonia as well. So for that, the antibiotics were actually good, but just from the feel of it, it didn't really do anything.
Mm-hmm.
But after 2 weeks, the fever slowly started going down, and I started feeling better. But throughout the time, I was just basically at home and suffering it through.
Okay. Wow. Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I'd like to delve into another thing I found on your website. Very nice website, by the way. I really liked it. You have a polyvagal theory. And our co-host, who's unfortunately not with us today, Jean Marie, she has something called POTS, postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, as a result of a brainstem injury in the Army. She and I are very aware of the vagus nerve and the role that it plays in critical systems in the body. How does your coaching help people recalibrate their central nervous system? And is this critical in that balance of CO2 and O2 in the body?
Right. So the vagal nerve is basically, that is the main nerve that helps you to stay calm. And it's called a vagal brake. So put a brake on the sympathetic nervous system that is always trying to go out of control. So when it's hyping itself up, then the brake is pulling back as well. So if that nerve is damaged, then again, this vagal tone, this vagal brake cannot be applied as much on the sympathetic side of the nervous system. The body cannot relax that much. And it's the same way as if you are not breathing out enough, you can't really breathe in, like take a deep breath in. It's the same way if you can't relax back down, then you can't really push your sympathetic side up that much.
Okay.
And then it's just becoming, it's working, but it's becoming less and less and less. And it's still there. It's still chronically active, but it can't really elevate. For example, with POTS, when if somebody stands up, they get dizzy and the blood pressure just
drops.
Falls down.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the body, because there's like a muscle activation and an activation of the nervous system. What should be happening is the sympathetic nervous system kicking in, contracting the blood vessels and really forcing the blood upstream into the brain and just, okay, we're getting active and let's start going. This can only happen if the body is calm enough to kick this in. If that makes sense.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Okay. So, for someone to find this balance again with the nervous system, to find a baseline where they can relax and ease back down and have good sleep, good restful sleep, and not go overboard with what they're doing throughout the day with their work, with their families. And again, this can happen, for example, with healthcare workers. They have a huge rate of burnout because they're going into excess. They're doing this not for themselves, but mostly for other people. So they're not really taking care of themselves, not starting off of, okay, what do I require in this? But what do my patients require? And for example, now during COVID times, we've seen a tremendous burnout rate in with nurses, with doctors, who've been on the front line of this whole thing the whole time.
Right.
And it's going to be crazy to see how they're going to come back or whether they're going to continue their work. Because if we're through with this pandemic, that's when the body says, okay, now we can relax, and they will just crash. This is my prediction, but we're going to see, hopefully not. But this is that one thing that healthcare workers and just anyone who's working with people go through day by day and should really take note of and take care of themselves first.
Well, it actually leads me into my next question, because a lot of our listeners, they are caregivers for mm-hmm. friends or loved ones. I guess actually two-part, what can the caregivers do to assist their patients to regain the balance of their blood gases. And I guess more, you know, again, with themselves, because it is a high stress level.
Right.
Absolutely. And one thing that comes to mind would be what I just said, to really start off from taking care of themselves first. If they fall out of doing their jobs, then not only they suffer, but anyone that they could have worked with suffers with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, and not considering their families and love life and personal life here, but just the patient. So it's really, really important to take care of themselves, take care of their own personal needs, and then give off of as much as they can. And if they would like to give more, but they body, for example, because they came back from COVID, because we've seen a lot of nurses who came back from COVID and are just terrified because they can't do the work that they did before COVID. They need to train themselves up to that level again, so they can provide as much that they would like to. So start off always from what their circumstances are, what their capabilities are, what the capabilities of their nervous system is, what the capabilities of their fitness is. And if it requires more of them, then start training towards that.
Okay.
I remember we talked to a doctor last year, and she said that, you know, doctor burnout, I guess we were talking about that. She said doctor burnout is a big problem. And what she does is every morning when she gets up, she takes, I don't know, was it 15 minutes or something? She takes, let's say, 15 minutes of her morning as soon as she gets up, just for herself, and she'll meditate and mm-hmm. she'll balance and she'll breathe and she'll to start the day off right for her. Do you think that's a good recommendation?
Huge. 15 minutes of just getting clear with, I'm important, my emotions are important, what I'm feeling is important, and that I start off with in any situation, I start off from that, from what I am experiencing, what I'm feeling, then I can be sure that at the end of the day, I'm not coming home as a wreck,
right?
But that I'm actually feeling accomplished, and that I can look back on the day and be proud of myself.
Right. And you would think that when you wake up, that, you know, you wake up, you get out of bed, you think, oh, I'm refreshed. But you need to kind of concentrate on yourself and say, and kind of take inventory of yourself and say, did I get a good night's sleep? Yeah. But take that time to really start the day fresh by doing a little meditation, doing a little, what is the breathing called? What's the breathing called when they meditate? And the deep breathing?
Diaphragmatic breathing?
Diaphragmatic breathing, right. Just to kind of give the day a good start.
Absolutely. And whatever gets you in that state, I would say. Like if that's a cold shower, do a cold shower. If that's Wim Hof breathing, like some hyperventilated breathing with some hold back, then that's another thing that you can do. If it's box breathing to get you really balanced in, that's another thing you can do. Switch nostril breathing. There's like plenty of things.
Wow.
Whatever rocks your boat, basically. But that's the main thing. If you can stay in that balanced fight mindset on the sympathetic side, not really on the flight side, like I would take those two apart. This is not a misconception that a lot of people do and make, to take fight and flight together. That's the sympathetic nervous system side. That's all bad, and we should basically try to avoid that. The sympathetic nervous system side is very, very important for our survival and to accomplish tasks. But there again, the fight side has a very distinct difference from the flight side. The fight side is where I'm capable of doing something. I'm proactively doing something, and I can look back afterwards and be proud of myself that I accomplished something. So I'm really proactive with it. On the flight side, I'm very reactive to my surrounding. And I'm still capable of doing stuff. I would not like to do anything. This is where a lot of people are with their works, for example. They just suffer through it. Mm-hmm. They would not like to do it, but they just suffer through it. They still do it because they have to. They don't have any options, so they have to do it. And then afterwards, they don't feel any win with it. And this is just a nervous system side that they're on, and they are training themselves to hate their jobs, basically.
Okay. I kind of see that. Yeah. I can understand how you separate that. I never thought of doing that, but that makes perfectly good sense.
So, Marcy, what advice would you have for someone? Yeah. I'm sorry?
Sorry, just
no.
One more thing going back to what the healthcare workers could do to better their patients with the gases. So first of all, take care of themselves first. Then either with this protocol or whatever protocol that they would advise, first try it on themselves.
Makes sense.
So that's good advice. All right.
Know the experiences that your patients go through. Because, for example, the hypoxia training that I recommend in the first step of my protocol, pushing the CO2 levels, holding your breath and doing some light walking or carrying during that, that elevates your CO2 levels where you get a short-term anxiety or panicky feeling that you then counteract with light breathing through the nose and controlled breathing, signaling to your body that actually this state is okay and I'm good, all is well, so I can come back down and relax. That's really, really important when they explain stuff to people and they can relate to what they're experiencing. For example, if somebody is feeling anxiety already and then they start feeling more anxiety to something that they're doing, then if the healthcare worker, for example, didn't experience this, they can't relate to this. And they would only expect that, okay, this should work. Okay, this doesn't work. This just gives my patient more anxiety. Then it's clearly bad.
Right.
But yeah, at first it might feel like that, but with the breathing and the controlled breathing afterwards, you can actually signal your body that, okay, this is acceptable level.
Okay. So that's the whole crux of it. The fact that you're trying to train your body to realize that, yes, this sudden need for, or the sudden rush of extra CO2 is not the end all. It's just a temporary problem, and we're gonna go one step further afterwards to get better.
Right.
Okay. Instead of being stuck and saying the extra CO2 is going to kill me and just being, I can't move anymore.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Okay.
And this is for the walking. This is for the controlled breathing.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right.
So I actually have two questions back to back. What advice would you have for someone recently diagnosed with COVID-19? And then for you personally, what's the best advice you received regarding your recovery from COVID?
So this is not professional medical advice. So
we put that disclaimer at the end of the show. Yeah, it's okay. You're safe.
But what my experience is, and first of all, it's not a death sentence.
It's not a death sentence. Okay.
Right. So it's the freaking out part, the anxiety part, and being scared, perfectly fine. It's okay. If they can keep this one part in the mind that their body's working and is doing the best they can, maybe going for talking to the doctors about starting to prescribe them low doses of steroids had very good effects, what I read up of. Also, I read a lot of good things about ivermectin. I know how available that is to people, but also a topic of conversation with their doctors. Also, pushing their vitamin C, D's, and some multivitamins, and thinking of this part of their life as something that will pass.
Okay.
So.
Okay. And I'm thinking, like, if you consider it, I guess the media has set it up to be quite the horrible monster. It is, but what you're saying is realize that it doesn't have to be a horrible monster. And if you take it one step at a time, don't let your mind turn it into something that you can't fight.
Right.
Keep it. Go ahead.
So even if it will have some after effects, like post-COVID symptoms, which we can't really predict how bad it will hit to certain people.
Right.
It all depends on, okay, what state your nervous system was in before, which is not really possible to measure, and it's not really being measured at all.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a healthier lifestyle, then you have a better chance of coming back faster. But if you had certain lifestyles, then it can happen that it will come out with dizziness, muscle fatigue, double-sidedness, hair loss, some liver function, kidney function loss. So how it will affect you is really up to the question of the future. But if you can keep this one thing within you and that this thing will pass, and when it will pass, then wherever you're at, you can start coming back from, and your body is a healing machine, and you always have the chance to get better. Then you can go through it. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. And what advice did Ugan also wanted to know? What advice did you get personally to help on your recovery?
I didn't really get too much advice. One thing that I got was to take it easy.
Yeah.
But that's a broad thing to say. Okay, so what is easy? And okay, what is taking easy? Because for me, I was a professional athlete. So I thought of myself as somebody really fit. So when it hit me so bad, I don't know, a lot of people were hit way worse than I did. But a lot of people were surprised that, oh shit, for 2 weeks he was out. And we thought of him that, okay, a couple of days and he'll be back on his feet. But it didn't really happen that way. But if somebody didn't do it before COVID, to really hone in on your signals and to take it easy, take it as easy as you need it to be.
Okay. All right.
So and this is the second step of the program, to teach your body and teach yourself how you can record those signals that are coming from your body, that is signaling you that, okay, you're going a bit overboard here.
Mm-hmm.
You need to dial it back a little bit. You can still keep going, but just go a bit slower.
Right. Maybe not at the same level that you're used to.
Right.
Right. But people can still accomplish a lot of things, but not go overboard with their capabilities and their
nervous system. Sure. Okay. Marcy, what have been some of the misconceptions that you've encountered regarding your role as a health coach?
But mostly it appears is that health coaches are mostly unacademic. That we're most of the times we're not coming from a university background, that we studied this for years. We studied this for years in different areas, but we're more on the doing side as in the reading side.
Got it.
And then gaining experience with people and looking for what works, what actually works. And like, this is something that is on the positive side, because we're maybe a bit open-minded towards certain protocols or regimes.
Mm-hmm.
Of it is that we're really open to new alternative ways.
I like that part.
Different areas, but also it. A lot of times, I see that it can be unstructured.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if the different alternative styles, breathings, workouts, medication is not being brought together holistically, and to see the body and the mind just together as one whole, then it can be very fragmented, and one can be very pragmatic, I think the right word.
Right.
That that, okay, this works and this is the only thing that can work. For example, just taking any diet and then putting the, you know, the label that this is the best diet and then everybody should do this and not go off of basic rules and basic ideas that connect the big picture.
Okay, thank you. I think I like that. Okay, Marcy, what can we do to help reduce the sense of isolation that our friends, family, and neighbors might be feeling during COVID?
Call them every once in a while.
That's easy enough.
I think that
call me. Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
Reach out. Right.
Be proactive about this. Don't wait around and expect for things to happen, because in our everyday lives, this was something that happened. That we went to work, we met people, we had some socialization, we were on the bus, we bumped into someone in the coffee shop or something. This most of the time we expect it to happen automatically. With COVID, it doesn't really happen. We have to be proactive about it.
And you're right.
If we realize that okay, I might need some socialization or my friends are in need of socialization, then go and make it happen. There are ways. There are still. It's not going to be the same, but it's still going to be something that. That is actually in the polyvagal theory. If somebody reads up on it and reads up on creating a safe space and what effect the sense of safety, what effect socialization has on the sense of safety of one, then they know that talking to someone, having some connection, having some personal connection creates that sense of safety and that vagus nerve activation, basically, that creates that parasympathetic side to be stronger and to be more active so one can calm down.
It's something that you need to exercise in order to get better. You can't just
exactly.
Assume that nature is going to take its course. You have to actually exercise it and work it in order to improve it, right?
Right, exactly. And the state that you are in most gets trained the most.
I agree
that
with that.
Sense.
I agree
right.
with that completely. Right. I often put memes on my Facebook page to try to get people elevated because, you know, there's so many people that are just either stuck down or stuck straight. I want to get people up. So I figured, hey, the more I can get up, the better I think people will be.
I've seen some of your Facebook posts.
Okay. Well, I do go off the rails a little bit, but...
So, Marcy, how can our listeners out there learn more about your protocols? Do you have a website?
Yes, he does. I'm going to put links on our website. But go ahead and let our listeners know.
It's www.benamarcy.au/post-COVID.
Okay. I will put a link for that on our website.
Okay, perfect. And and then I share mental health quotes, ideas, short essays on my Instagram page.
Instagram?
BenMRCEU.
Say it again?
BenMRC, my name?
Yep.
EU.
Okay. So that's BenMarci.eu on Instagram.
No dot.
No dot.
No dot.
Not for Instagram.
Dash.
Yes, BenMRCEU.
Yes, sorry.
I don't even think there's a dash.
I'm not. I know.
We're a little older.
I'm not an Instagrammer. My daughter is. Well, we will definitely put links for them on our website.
Thank you. And if somebody would like to find out more about post-COVID and to have a bunch of people for support, Survival Core on Facebook is the way to go.
Okay. Yeah, I put that already. Thank
great,
you.
Great. Okay. Thank you so much for coming on this morning and telling us your story. I'm sure a number of our listeners can relate to your situation. And hopefully through this episode, I hope they feel that they are stronger than they actually think.
Right.
They are. Thank you so much for having me on. And if only this idea gets through to people that they are the most capable people. And I listened to a couple of your podcasts, and most of the people who were on agreed with this, that people need to take more responsibility over their health and,
right.
and have the trust in themselves that whatever they're feeling, whatever they're thinking about their health is matters just as much as the advice of doctors or healthcare professionals.
That's right.
Right. If our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime. And never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this podcast.